Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, Keith.
I've pressed record. Everything is fine. I hope. Fingers crossed. It's looking okay so far.
I can see the recording button. It's working.
I can see it too. I was fully convinced I'd pressed record the last time, but I think, you see, I upgraded my Zoom to there's a pro version. I've been using the free one for a long time. So I noticed after I interviewed you, when you press record, it comes up, do you want to record to the cloud or to this computer? And I obviously just ignored that button or that choice and just thought, oh, hit record, done. And then that was it.
I have done similar. I have very much done similar. Would you mind? I have at 3 o'clock, I have a client.
Yeah.
Does that put us under pressure?
Let's do whatever we can until 3 o'clock.
Yeah, because I figure we know all the questions now. We'll be twice as fast with them.
I was just going to say, let's just have a completely different conversation.
It's the Keith Walsh Podcast. It's essential like your breakfast. It will get you up and going, learn some things you didn't know. Yeah, it's the Keith Walsh Podcast. It's the Keith Walsh Podcast. Give you energy like Buckfast. And if your head's in a pickle or you're looking for a giggle, it's the Keith Walsh Podcast, yeah.
Good evening and welcome to the Keith Walsh Podcast. It is the 3rd... I always do that. It's the 29th of the 3rd, 29th of March. It's still March. We're a couple of days out from April Fool's Day yet, so still time to think up of your...
Well... It was at that moment I realised I had messed up, big style. I was recording into, I was going to say the wrong microphone, but it wasn't even a microphone. It's a document camera I have that I plug in for when I'm doing carding with Keith, and it's also got its own microphone, so I was recording the intro on a little thing, and that's the sound there, and I nearly put it all up sounding like that. Thankfully, I listened back to it. And realise my mistake. Anyway, it's almost April Fool's Day. I should have done an April Fool. I should have said, "Oh, this is my last podcast." That would have been gas. Or else it wouldn't have been gas. It was one of those things working on radio. April Fool's Day, where you'd have to try and every year come up with a zinger. Oh, a brilliant fool. A brilliant ruse to fool the nation or Dublin or whoever was listening. And, you know, someone would come in and and they'd storm out and go, "I hate you. I'm never coming back." And then be like, "Ah, April Fools." And most people wouldn't have even noticed. might have said later, "Yeah, I think he said he was leaving." Yeah, I don't know. Then he came back. Don't know what was going on. Wasn't really listening. You see, radio is very transient. You don't really listen to it intently. You hear snippets of it. You hear a bit of a song. You hear a bit of a thing. If you're driving, your mind's elsewhere. You're tuning in, tuning out. Maybe that was just my experience of people listening to my radio show. Anyway, I should have on April Fool's Day bring out a podcast and say, "Ha, April Fool. That wasn't a podcast at all. It was just a build up to April." See, it doesn't. No one would care. My favorite April Fool was I think it was the BBC did a news clip of the spaghetti harvest in Italy, which I thought was excellent, and it went very well. Went down very well. I think that was back in the day when you can get away, when you can do that kind of thing, and a certain amount of people would be taken in by it. Of course, April Fool finishes at 12 o'clock. Although that could be an April Fool thing as well. Like someone says, "Ah, April Fool." April Fool. What was the rhyme? April Fool's come and gone. You're the fool's carrying on. They could say that after 12 o'clock, and they'd be like, "Oh no." And then at 3, they could be like, ah, second, April Fool goes on till 4. Gotcha. I always enjoyed it when my son would do an April Fool, because it would be something like, Dad, the bathroom's after blowing up. Quick. And then you'd have to run upstairs and be like, you know, all freaked out. What? The bathroom's after blowing up? And run up the stairs, and then you'd get there and he'd be like, ah, April Fool, the bathroom didn't blow up. Every time he got me. Look, it's great for the kids, April Fool. We all loved it when we were children. So let's just leave it there. Okay, I'm gonna sort of this is gonna be a short enough intro. I always say that, and then it's not. You're very welcome to the podcast if you're new. I'm Keith Walsh. This is the Keith Walsh podcast, as you may have guessed. And it's just me talking to people that I find interesting, and hopefully we have interesting chats about things that I don't really know much about, but I'm learning, and hopefully you pick up little nuggets of learning as well. And sometimes I like to try and talk about things that men don't usually talk about, or people don't usually talk about. And my chat with Connor is no different. I need to get this intro done, get the podcast up, take me meds and go to bed, because I did something to my back yesterday. I've done it before, I knew what it was, and whereas before I would have like, oh, I'll leave it for a couple of weeks, I'll stretch it out, I'll try and... When it happened to me last time, I actually did a bit of research and I said, what's going on here? And, you know, one of the things I found out, the worst thing you can do is stretch it, rest it. Rest it until it's better. Leave it alone. Because what are you stretching out? Like, it's something in my hip and my back. It goes. And then that's it. The problem then isn't the muscle. The muscles around it are then annoyed. So they are sore. But stretching out isn't going to help, because it's already happened. It's too late. You're not... Anyway. So now, this time when it happened, I said, right, on to the doctor. Say, doc, do you remember the last time this happened to me? Give me the exact same medication. I'm going to take it straight away, which I did today. And I reckon by tomorrow I'll be out walking, and I feel like maybe by the next day I'll be running very gently. And that's much better, a much better scenario than the last time, few times it happened. And it doesn't happen. It happens every year, 6 months. But like when it's happened before, I'd refuse the doctor, refuse medication, be really stubborn and stupid. So this time I said, give me the stuff, I'm taking it. It does make you a bit drowsy. Flaked out on the couch earlier on, which was kind of nice. And feeling better already. I'll be back on my feet by tomorrow. As in, not just, I'm walking around, but I'll be walking. Walking properly. With the dog. Maybe running the next day or the day after. So anyway, that's my medical history. It's time to meet our guest. Connor Creighton is he's an author. He's a journalist. He is a meditation teacher. He talks about, he gives talks about mindfulness, about meditation. If you want to learn about meditation, he will teach you. He's a good guy. He's had quite the life. He's experienced a lot. He's been there, done that, bought the t-shirt, and, you know, went to the party afterwards. Worked behind the bar and all that kind of stuff. He's a good guy. Irish meditation teacher. He studied in monasteries and centres in India and California. He teaches courses throughout Ireland, from art studios to prison yards, corporate boardrooms to GA pitches. And I met him, I became aware of him because I'm in a WhatsApp group with a group called the Dublin Boys Club. He set up the Berlin Boys Club and then set up the Dublin Boys Club with the artist Mazur. And Mazur actually designed the cover of the book And the book is the reason he came on to talk to me. The book is called This Is It. And it's basically about, it's a memoir, kind of sorts, but it's about his life. But it also, it's a route into meditation and mindfulness for people that aren't into meditation, mindfulness, and ultimately happiness. He used to write for Vice. He was a war journalist, I think, in the Balkans and... Did you say Balkans or Balkans? And Afghanistan. Another thing I wanted to talk to him about, but we didn't get time because I'd already recorded a chat with him. Or not recorded, we'd already spoken last week. I didn't record it properly, so he had to come back on. Had a little. He squeezed me in between a couple of clients because he's a very busy man, and I really appreciate that. Chaotic childhood, which you can read about in the book. And here he is kind of now out the other side, seeing the light, as it were. Anyway, thank you very much to Conor Creighton. Hope you enjoy the chat. It is episode 85 of the Keith Walsh podcast. Please enjoy. And you can email anytime, keithwalshpod@gmail.com. Yes, enjoy. Enjoy. I feel like saying now, without further ado, it is Conor Creighton.
we did the dress rehearsal the other week.
Yeah, I just have a whole load of other questions to ask you now because I got time. how's your day? So, give me a typical day.
So far,
is today a typical? Let's just pick today. I don't care if it's a typical day or if it's a bad day. I just want to know how your day has been so far.
Well, so my book arrived today. And I haven't actually seen it yet. So it actually arrived, and it was very funny because I do lots of one-on-one classes. So I was in the middle of a one-on-one class and the doorbell rang, and I had a weird premonition that it was the book. Because, well, I was expecting the book. There was nothing special about my premonition. I thought it would either Friday or today it would come. And my girlfriend was in the next room and she got the book. But then I was on like this Zoom call with someone talking about their thoughts and working on a meditation with them. And I could see her out of the corner of my eye kind of coming to the door with this package in her hand. And I had to use all my Jedi focusing skills to remain in the class and not be dragged away. So it was a very exciting morning. And then...
Well, I should say congratulations.
You know. Yeah, thank you, Keith. Thank you. And the funniest thing, though, too, is I published a book about 5 years ago, and it was kind of a novel set in Berlin, and I hated the cover to the point where I was kind of pressured by the publishers. They said, do this cover, and they put a picture of me on the cover. And I don't know, I suppose I just listened to them, and I was like, this is a great idea, but it's the one book that I kind of never, ever show anyone, you know, and I didn't want to put it on social media. So I was so happy when this book arrived, designed by Mazer. I was like, oh, this is beautiful. I can show this everywhere. I won't have a problem with this.
I should describe it. This Is It is the name of the book. And there's like a dust jacket that covers it. So the this and the is in white. And then you reveal the dust jacket and it's got a Mazer print underneath that I think... He used the trees and the scenery of Tiknock Hill as a. Am I right in that? Or?
Yeah, he did. And it's phenomenal, Keith, because I'm sure you know yourself. Spiritual books, by and large, they are sky blue with maybe a couple of pebbles scattered on a perfectly white beach, or some sort of water imagery. And in my head I was like, please, I do not want another sky blue spiritual book on the bookshelves. Give me something else. So I'm very excited that we got something that looked so kind of,
it looks nice. It's
amazing, right?
Yeah, it's aesthetically pleasing. It's nice to hold. It's a nice size as well, and there's a nice bit of weight to it. You know, it's a substantial book. I mean, if you want to review and you want to put that, in the paperback or whatever, the next version that comes out, it can be, it's a substantial book, Keith Walsh.
And the most, my favorite thing about it is that the photo of me is so small, it could be anyone.
Oh, man.
That's the nicest part.
Are you able to, are you good at enjoying those moments?
No, actually, I'm not. I'm not always so good at enjoying those moments. It comes afterwards. I remember when the book arrived, I almost felt embarrassed. You know, I was like, there's my name. Oh my God. And my girlfriend was like, we should celebrate. And I was like, oh. Let's get a croissant. we went for a wander and we split a croissant. And she's like, do you not want to do anything else? And I was like, no, I kind of just want to be on my own for a little. So I think that's just, I think for me, what happens or what I notice with this, Keith, is that the celebration moments or the satisfaction moments come probably down the line when someone will write me and might say something like this, I really related to this and this helped. And then it's in those moments that I kind of managed to I think it's maybe like a sort of an empathetic moment, you know, when you're like, ah, someone out there has suffered in a way that I suffered and together we've healed based on this, you know, somehow from this. At the moment, it's just, the book is just a pretty object. You know, it's a tool. Mm. And I think I won't feel satisfied until I've seen the tool do a couple of jobs, you know?
Well, it's done a job already because I was leafing through it this morning and I hurt my back. And I've been just doing a bit of running and not stretching enough. And so my back, it's a thing that I get every now and then. And I was reading a bit about gratitude and it was kind of like, there was the bit where you said like the guy who had his bike stolen, he arrived into one of your classes. He just had his bike stolen and he surprised everybody and said, you know what? We had a good innings. I had that bike for 3 years. I was lucky to have the bike for 3 years. So, you know, I'm pretty happy. It was, you know, so I decided with my sore back to just be like, well, I can still sit up in the bed. I can use my arms. I've got laptops. I've got phones. I can still work. It's all good, you know. But the other thing I did, which surprised me, I would have been terrible. I don't know if you can relate to this. I would have been terrible at looking after myself. So I'm not a doctor person. Yeah. I hurt my back a while ago, a good few years ago. And then it was so bad. It was so bad that I had to like stand. I had to cycle to get the train and then stand on the train to get into work. And sometimes in meetings and work, I had to lie on the floor. It was so bad. I never went to the doctor once to get painkillers. I never went to a physio. I just waited for the pain to ease gradually over time. When I look back now, I'm just like, I was such an idiot. Whereas today, it happened to me quite recently and I left it for a week. And then I eventually said, look, I'm going to get some painkillers from the doctor. Got painkillers from the doctor. Just like that, he fixed it. So this time when it happened, I rang the doctor. I said, can I have the painkillers now, today? I'm going to take them straight away because I know this will make me better and I can get on with my life. And that's a change I've noticed in myself. I don't know if you can relate to that not looking after yourself thing.
Completely. I mean, my examples would be more sort of related to food. You know, like I think my greatest weakness is food. Like I do love food so much. And I'm 5.5 weeks that I quit sugar. And that was like, I've quit a few things in my life. Like I quit drink for a year once and I quit smoking once and quit, but I actually think sugar was the hardest thing to quit. Cause I really began to realize that I was using sugar as a means of just coping with life.
It was the dopamine hit you were going for.
It was my dopamine hit. And it was very much, it was as I began to kind of realize sort of just the damage that sugar can do to your body and the damage that sugar addiction can do. That sort of, well, that was kind of, that would have been kind of sort of a number of different layers behind beginning to recognize like what, how I'm taking care of myself or not. And I don't know about you, Keith, but I think that's a very, I've always thought it was a very a male thing. This, you know, not going to a doctor, not admitting you're feeling pain, not sort of, you know, like even so much, I know growing up, like doing sports and things like this, you know, where you would kind of, you wouldn't lie on the ground or anything like that. If you got injured, you'd get up, or you'd play on with your knees hobbling, you know, and things like this. A real fear of showing any sort of vulnerability.
It's the whole man up thing, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
Which is, I mean, vulnerability is one of the things that I've been, my therapist is the first person who said the word vulnerability, you need to be more vulnerable. And I thought vulnerable meant cycling your bike without a helmet, you know? it's something that I talk a lot about to people, who, anybody who listens, is vulnerability and how much freedom being vulnerable can give you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, completely. Yeah, but very much it's that idea that you kind of are dropping the mask by doing. And I think it's also like so many of us wander around. I think if anything, if we're, one of the things that has kind of, I found a little refreshing from what has been a very difficult year, is that in all my different friendships and contacts, people are kind of really being very honest about what they're going through and being more vulnerable. And I found that like very refreshing, you know, as people are kind of admitting like, oh God, it's so hard to be with my partner in the same house all the time. Or someone's like, I'm so sick of my job, or I'm so done in, I'm tired of my own thoughts. And I think when one person is vulnerable like this, it does invite or create a space for the other person to be vulnerable.
And then you can have an honest conversation, which is totally different than a conversation you might have where you're just saying everything's grand, and that's just a stilted, unfulfilling conversation.
This admission, you know, that kind of, I think a lot of us run around with the idea that everyone is having a great time apart from them.
Mm.
You know, you're like, that person is in a wonderful, loving relationship. That person isn't worried about their body. That person falls asleep at night. And the nice thing about this year, I found, is that like, everyone just like, I'm going through hell. How about you? And it's just made it perhaps a little easier to be a human.
I feel like I need to be honest with you now. I'm struggling with sugar. I gave up drink about a year ago.
Yeah.
And so now I'm doing this this fasting thing, intermittent fasting. So I don't break my fast until 5 o'clock every day. I eat at 5 o'clock every day.
Right.
But within my window of eating, I'll have chocolate, and that's. But I know, if I was be honest with myself, the whole reason I'm doing the intermittent fasting is so I don't put on weight, and I'm allowing myself to eat chocolate every day.
Yeah.
It's a fucked up thing that I'm doing, you know, instead of just knocking the sugar on. I thought I gave up sugar years ago until I realized that part of my booze addiction, you know, my craving at the weekend, yes. I drank Friday, Saturday night, but like I would be like gasping for a beer. It was sugar was half the thing I was addicted to.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I feel that I was the sugar thing only happened to me because I was embarrassed. I had a moment where there's a bakery around the corner from me, and I go in there every day, like, and just, you know, pick up bread or stuff like this. Like, who needs to buy bread every day? And I realized that I was just going in there to buy cake. eggs and like a little cookie or something like this. And I went in there like 5.5 weeks ago, and the guy behind the counter, I was just sort of walking through. It's a little bakery, and then there's a kind of a regular shop that sells vegetables and stuff beside it. And I was walking past the bakery, and just pops his head out behind the counter, and he goes, "Something sweet?" And I felt myself flushing. I was like, shit, they know me. They're laughing about me. They're laughing about this guy who comes in again. Big, like, giant piece of carrot cake every day or something like this. And then I remember I walked home and said to my girlfriend, I was like, look, sit down. I need to admit something to you. Jeez. I was like, I've been doing something behind your back. It was like every day I'm going off, and sometimes I'm having brownies, sometimes I'm having muffins, and sometimes I'm having a big fuck off piece of carrot cake. Can you help me with this? So she was like, okay, we both quit together. And yeah, it was
the admission of the you were behind her back, you know. How could you
for a carrot cake.
Yeah, I'll find a reason to pop up to the shop, and I'll buy two little or three little chocolate Freddo bars, you know, the kids chocolate bars.
Oh, I do. Yeah. And then you can kind of pretend that you're buying it for your kids.
Person behind the counter thinks, what a sweet guy, he's buying sweets for his kids. Yeah. A bit of chocolate for his son, that's, he's a nice guy. And I'm just scoffing them in the car on my way home with our 10th 24 roll of toilet paper for that week that we don't need. I just want to go through something with you before we get to the book specifically.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm going to admit to people that this is our second interview, because I forgot to record the first one. So I'm kind of like, the first interview is an interview people will never hear, but it was good. It was really good. I really enjoyed it. I got a lot from it. But you worked for Vice.
I did, yeah.
So you wrote a good few. I'm going to just quickly go through some of your Vice articles, and you can tell me what you got from that and where you were at the time. So yeah. it can be fairly brief enough. So yeah. Let's go back to sort of, because like I know now from having the first conversation, you know, people will find out from the book,
yeah,
about your journey and life and where you've come from and where you are. So I'm going to start with this one. This is an article for Vice in 2017. In August 2017, and it was under the heading "Sex: Can Meditation Cure Erectile Dysfunction?"
Yeah.
well, first of all, can it? And second of all, tell me a little bit about writing that article and where your head was at the time.
Well, I had moments in my 20s where I just was so anxious. I mean, I suppose that's a kind of my mental health history is one of anxiety and depression and sort of suicide and various kind of eating disorders and things in my late teens and 20s. And I had periods in my 20s where I couldn't have sex. It was such a difficult experience for me. And it was very funny because at the time I was a bartender. And I was a kind of a classic cocky bartender who scored fairly often. But
where did you work? Can you say?
Yeah, I was working in the kitchen nightclub in Dublin.
Oh, because I was a barman at the Bailey.
Ah, no way.
On South Ann Street, yeah. I probably would have frequented the kitchen a little bit. Go on anyway.
Okay. But so, and I used to think I was like, I would kind of joke to myself that I'm taking home women and cuddling them more often than most other men in this sense, because just went through this period where it was quite difficult for me to have sex, and there was so much nerves involved with it. And, Through meditation, because meditation definitely helps to kind of work with on anxiety and things like this, it seemed to kind of remove an awful lot of the sexual fear that I had. And it just allowed, it just took an awful lot of this sort of personal pressure away. And so, yeah, that article was just kind of talking about this idea of meditation as a form of kind of dealing with stress and anxiety, and how that could then be used for erectile dysfunction. And what's interesting is that I have had a number of like men come to me for meditation training, and like meditation training in relation to sexual performance. And so I thought for a while, I was like, I should run a course, and we should call it like mindfulness of the dick or something. Yeah. We could run these courses for people. And a couple of them have kind of like written to me and been like, actually, this is something really amazing happened here through just becoming more mindful and becoming more just bodily aware. It enabled me to then kind of have like wonderful connections with partners and like fully functioning sex.
Because this is a huge part of, I mean, I'm doing a little bit of work on the idea of midlife crisis at the moment for a thing I'm working on. And that this is a huge, there's lots of things that happen to men that they just chalk down as, well, my penis doesn't work anymore. I'm just going to carry on doing what I do, never look for help, never tell my wife why I don't want to have sex with her anymore. I'm just going to try and get through the rest of my life penisless. It's just like that limb doesn't work anymore. I'll just carry on.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's because that's part of the shame in it. And I think that was definitely why I wrote that article, because I was like, oh, Jesus, Connor, this is pretty exposing. But I was like, well, I don't know. I suppose I've had a career of kind of throwing myself under the bus in articles and been very, very open and honest and stuff. So I was like, well, you should, this is going to be of huge benefit to people. So write about it. And then the interesting thing too, Keith, is you just get a lot of people writing to you, like when I wrote these articles and stuff, especially whenever I've written anything about erectile dysfunction, you just get loads of men writing to you and then, can I talk to you? You know, and they'll call you up and they'll be like, oh, I've never said this to anyone before. And I'll go and I'll listen to them and be, don't worry, I won't mention it on a podcast.
What was it? Was it Barry? Was it? but that's the thing. And that's the thing about vulnerability. And it's all part, it's all wrapped up in it, because we're afraid to admit we haven't had sex for 5 years, and we haven't been able to tell our girlfriends or our wives or our boyfriends why. And men, we are terrible for backing ourselves into a corner.
Yes. Yeah. And also for kind of just, like, one of the things that I've kind of recognized way more this year than any other is just how tender and fragile and insecure we all are. And the more you can kind of recognize that in yourself, the more you can kind of recognize, Lord, it's a heavy toll being me. You know, it's hard to kind of make these decisions every day, get up and go to work every day, try and be in love, all these different things. And the more I think we can kind of admit that readily to each other, even to the point of kind of like, you know, as a man, like when the expectation on us when we're in a sort of a sexual situation is to be like kind of psychopathically confident.
Yeah.
And, you know, and as virile as some sort of like bull in a field, you know? And whereas I think kind of, I also like, and I don't want to speak for women here, but I imagine that kind of a woman would much prefer kind of that honest vulnerability as a way of forging a connection rather than sort of, I don't know, all that bluster.
Yeah, I think And I definitely think a silly underpants on your head dance in the bedroom is much better than coming in like a fucking bull from the field. You know what I mean? humor's okay as well, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Like take the pressure off yourself. Take the, you know, you're not the stag that needs to prove itself. Just have fun with it. Relax. But also just talking about it on this, like, I feel like people might hear that and go, okay, it's all like, the more the people talk about it, not everybody's out there having a great sex life. Cause that's the belief. It's like everyone else is having sex every night except me. And I'm not going to do anything about it because I'm too embarrassed to admit that I'm not, you know?
Yeah. And this is also the thing with kind of like with any of these sort of like anxiety or stress or depression or doubt or things like this, is that we do tend to allow these emotions and feelings to reduce us in size. You know, when you're experiencing anxiety, you think, oh God, well, I'm all on my own here. Nobody else is going through this. And what's going on with me? Whereas I really feel, and this is kind of where I think meditation has helped me a hell of a lot, is the idea that when you experience anxiety, you can begin to recognize it, engage it as something that affects us all, you know, and how in ways like, you know, kind of like a sort of joyous moments unite us, you know, especially, you know, in like Ireland, especially, like if there's something happens with sport, we're all united. But wouldn't it be wonderful if we were also united in the grief, united in the anxiety, united in the stress, if we recognize that like we are all going through this too, rather than kind of trying to sweep those things under the carpet, and the effect is that we just feel kind of very isolated and left alone.
Yeah, totally. There was a great moment I watched online. It was an Aussie rules footballer who had suffered from depression and had unfortunately died by suicide, and his teammates took to the pitch before the game, and you know, basically one of them had a mic in his hand and stopped everything. Everything was quiet. He said and addressed the crowd and said, this now is the time to talk, you know. So I just felt it was a great moment where everyone was there for the match. Everyone was mostly, I'd imagine, majority men. All the players were men. They were all sort of around in a huddle and recognizing that and saying, look, we need to start talking here. You know, it just seemed to be the perfect place to deliver that message.
Yeah.
And that's why I think with books like this, you know, and I think with your cover, and I think with the, you know, I'm hoping that we'll cross over from, you know, spirituality section of the bookshop into, well, listen, lads, this is for everybody here. You know, this is, do you know what I mean? Like we're all struggling, and these books and this book in particular, life is a struggle. It's arbitrary. You will, you know, people will die. Things will happen. You will lose your job. Your bike will be stolen. But this is
fail you in critical moments.
You'll have a sugar addiction for a while that you won't admit to anybody. But these are the tools. Meditation, mindfulness, awareness, that these are the tools that help you enjoy the struggle more than you would without them.
Yeah, exactly. And it's sort of I know myself, like kind of like before I came to meditation, I felt like I was the last person in the world who would ever come to meditation. Do you know what I mean, Keith? It was very much like no, I'm intellectual, it's knowledge, it's sort of
science,
and even to, it was even kind of somehow perhaps sort of like, yeah, I was kind of in love with my image of being like, yeah, I'm a little bit of a kind of a dark figure, you know, I'm a bit sad, you know, a bit kind of, do you know, with like, yeah, no, I want to stay at home and drink a bottle of wine on my own sort of a person, do you know, and listen to sad music, and that's how I'm creative, and almost kind of look down on happiness, you know, we kind of look on like happiness has been a bit of a sort of a, how would you say, like even a kind of a weak emotion. And it was very interesting that kind of, as I first started to kind of dabble in spirituality, that I began to realize, oh Christ, you know, there's a whole load of trappings to this. You know, there's burning incense and there's beads and there's like tie drop pants and there's hacky sack and all this sort of shite. But you don't have to actually get involved in all the trappings. You don't have to buy the decorations. The central message is really just a way of kind of improving your life dramatically. And I always felt like kind of that I had never been introduced to a sort of a practical spirituality before. All the spirituality that had come my way or been advertised to me had involved like shaving my head and wearing a dress. And so to kind of, as I sort of got into it myself and I was like, well, hold on, none of these things are actually that important. The important thing is that you become kind to yourself. And so I think that was definitely what I was trying to do with the book, was to create something that cynical me from 8 years ago would have maybe read.
Yeah, I think it's important, and I really hope it gets to those hard to reach places, and it gets to, because, and I think it's, you know, it's definitely getting there. It's definitely penetrating, you know, the places that it needs to. It's, I mean, it's, I'm the same. I would have been like,
yeah,
you know, happy people are fucking idiots, you know, they don't understand. And, you know, the tortured artist is much more, I was much more interested in the lives of Iggy Pop and, you know, drug taking people who died too young, or, you know, that was much more attractive to me as a young man. But it's amazing. It's amazing then once you get into this kind of thing, and you can admit that you enjoy it. But the other thing you're saying is like, these are just tools. Like it's not a destination. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to walk out of your family. You don't have to leave your job. You don't have to, this will all make it better, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. You can kind of, you can make it up on your own. You know, it's sort of the beautiful thing that I always like about meditation and just this kind of the pathways of this is that all of the kind of the morals and the ethics, they come from within. You know, as you begin to kind of, you know, as you begin to examine yourself, you know, as you begin to do this sort of practice, you start to recognize things where you're like, you know, actually, when I lie, it just brings chaos into my life. So I'm just going to start to tell the truth. Or you start to recognize things that they kind of, oh, if I'm very ambitious, I'm more or less guaranteeing that I'm going to suffer in the future. So it's sort of so much of the kind of the, what you would call like the good teachings and the morality of meditation comes in the form of insight, comes in the form of kind of wisdom that naturally kind of grows with inside the meditation. And so that's the beauty of it, is that you're not trying to live up to any standard. The standard is just setting itself as you go deeper and deeper into the practice. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you just, from the first time you meditate, your life just starts to become simpler and simpler and simpler and simpler as you start to just let go of the things that would ordinarily bring negativity and stress and pain in.
Mm. And I think that's what's great about the book, is that it's a gentle introduction to all those. And it's very practical, because you give people things to do. I loved your explanation, your description of your granddad. Was it your granddad or your great granddad?
I think it was my great granddad.
Great granddad.
The orphan. Yeah.
I mean, like, where?
Yeah, my great granddad Jack, and I don't know, just a beautiful, example of, I think for many of us, you know, Keith, you have certain amounts of struggles and you have certain amount of difficulties, and you often feel like I've been cursed. I think many of us go around with this idea that, like, I personally have been cursed, why is all this shit happening to me? But I think so many of those struggles are an invitation for you to kind of grow and grow above that challenge and actually kind of find some sort of redemption within that. And like, I think like my great granddad, his story is always, I always find it fascinating, like, and very encouraging, that he was an orphan and he grew up in an orphanage in Port Leash around about in the 1900s. Yet, so wouldn't have even been touched as a baby. Do you know what I mean? You know how the orphanages were then? They were just fed in cots like animals in a pen, and probably like would have been picked up like just a couple of times. Yet somehow, despite the lack of touch, was the most affectionate and loving and kind and gentle man I'd ever met in my life. And he had a huge influence on me when I was this very small kid, because my parents would drop me up there and he would kind of like babysit me. You know what I mean? We just tool around the garden and stuff like that. And just remember, and I've had a couple of like darker moments in my life, and the memory of him came back to me, of just how sweet he was and how good he was, despite everything that happened to him. And I think even maybe at some stage he would probably say that like those things that happened to him made him who he was. The lack of love made him love him. You know, the poverty made him generous.
He definitely seemed grateful for what he had. Compared to where he came from. And there's a lovely moment description of him, just if you're walking the dog and the dog decided to sit down in the grass and the sun, that you would too, and be like, oh, this is, you know, that was the pace of life, you know.
Yeah, very much. And he had a lovely easiness about life.
And you do compare it to his wife's life and her way as well, but you can read about that in the book. There's a massive contrast there as well, which is even more interesting. And I didn't know you're a Kildare man.
Yeah, from Salins. Well, grew up in Salins and then went to school in Clane.
Ah, okay, yeah. So you're kind of an ace head, but not really.
Not really.
I'm Newbridge and you're the other side. Did you enjoy Salins? Was it a good place to grow up? Do you hanker after the
do I hanker after the now?
The salad days of Salins. And you go back to visit all the time, man.
Yeah, I go back all the time, and like it's funny that like I kind of like at the time when I was growing up in Salins, I was like, something's gone wrong here. Something's gone terribly wrong. This is not where I was supposed to be. Everywhere I looked, it was just like a home life was a little bit rough. Went to school, a lot of bullying happened, a lot of fights, and everywhere I was like, when am I going to catch a break? What's going on here? What's going on?
Where are my people?
Yeah, really. Like, where is my tribe? And the beautiful thing about kind of just recently is that, so I left Ireland when I was 17, and I've gone back in between, like on a few occasions, you know, for moments here and there, and like lived there for like years and stuff, but was always kind of coming and going to Ireland. And it's only like in the last couple of years since I've started to teach meditation more full time that I'm going back to Ireland all the time. And I'm more kind of based in Ireland than in anywhere. And the interesting thing, the really beautiful thing is that, you know, every so often there's someone from Salins will be in one of my meditation classes. And I'm kind of looking at them and we're talking about things at the end, and I go, ah, my tribe was there all along. I just didn't realize.
You probably, people weren't allowed to reveal their true spirits.
It's true.
You know, you either played Gaelic football or it was such a strict regime. You couldn't sort of, you know, there was no hippies around, you know. I mean, I remember somebody in schools telling me about Neil Young.
Yeah.
And like just this little thing opened up. I was like, what? Oh my God. And these lads that told me about Neil Young were like smoking dope. And I was like, this is so different to what I've known so far, it just seemed. But yeah, so the people were there all along, just not able to reveal themselves.
Yeah, hiding in plain sight.
Listen, man, I'd love to. I think we could do two of these. I'd love to get you back on. I could talk to you forever.
Let's do that. I'd love to.
Yeah, I'll give you a shout, and we'll arrange a part two, and in a few weeks, and we'll see how the book's going, all that kind of stuff. Best of luck with it. Thanks a million. And obviously, this is our second time doing this.
We're getting better each time, Keith.
Yeah, I think.
I feel our double act is improving each time. Yeah. As we place more and more restrictions on ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, man, best of luck with the book, and talk to you soon. We'll definitely do a part two at some stage.
Deadly, Keith. Thank you so much. Have a lovely day, right?
All right, Connor. You too. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Do do the beat of a drum. There you go, Connor Creighton. His book is out. Go and buy it. It's really good. He's really good. If you're curious about meditation, mindfulness, and you think it's not for you, Connor's here to tell you otherwise. It's not like you have to stop living your life and move to India. It's just a way of finding a bit of space in. And then you can just get on, you know, finding enough space where you can just get on with your life. And as I said, like slowly but surely, you know, you start thinking differently, seeing things differently. His book is called This Is It. His other books, You Know Yourself, An Irish Guide to Mindfulness. That must be the other book then. And then the other one he mentioned in the chat that he didn't really want to talk about because he didn't like the cover. But he's there on Instagram, Twitter. You'll find him if you Google his name. Lots of information. Do get in touch with him if you'd like him to teach you how to meditate. You will be very glad you did. Okay, thanks, Connor. Best of luck with the book. I gotta go get this thing podcast up on the internet so other people can listen to it, and then I have a chat with my friend Mike to put up, and then I have to go and take my medication, and then flake out for the night and wake up tomorrow a new man. Oh yeah, watch out world, here I come. And then I can stop taking the medication. And then what I'll do is I'll have an emergency back box. Or I'll keep that medication in a box. And if it happens again, I'll go, boom, straight away, let's go. Let's get it into you. I should really just, when I get better this time, do my yoga. Do it every day. And when I say yoga, don't think I'm weird. Just stretching. I just need to stretch. And stretching. Yoga is a great form of stretching. I need to stretch every day and then it won't happen. I think the problem is one of my... here I go again. I think one of my legs is... One of my hips, it's like dropped on one side. And my legs... It's not like my leg. One of my legs is longer than the other, but it's a tiny bit. And that's not because of the length of my leg. It's just because... It's dropped or something. I'm not really sure, but so it kind of goes every now and then if I do something weird or if I just haven't stretched properly in a long time. Enough about me. Hope you're all well. As I said, thank you very much for listening to the podcast. If you're new, you're very welcome. Please tell your friends. Please share on social media. The email address for me is keithwalshpod@gmail.com. About anything at all, I'm available 24 hours a day, 24/7. Do subscribe so the podcast pop in automatically. Do give us a rating as well. 5 stars would be great. And yeah, as I said, tell your friends. This is part of the Acast Creator Network, so thank you very much to Acast. And that's it. Mind how you go. Stay in by the wall. Be careful of the buses. And don't let the boogeyman get you. All right. Is it the boogeyman or the boogeyman? The boogeyman is kind of like the guy from the 70s who dances and might have an afro. The boogeyman. That's different to the boogeyman or the bogeyman. Anyway, I'm going to bogey off myself. I'll see you soon. Take care. Good night. Stay bright. Oh, that might work. Take care. Good night. Stay bright. I'll try that one. See ya. We'll be right back.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.